Hello.
You're on with Nick and Fiona.
There's just moments of, well, this is pretty weird.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Bassine. Hey, Nick, what are we talking about today?
Fiona, today we're talking about the return of The Good Fight. They're up to season 3. We're talking about The Ice Storm, an Ang Lee movie from 1997. And we are talking about what we've been watching. But first, The Good Fight.
Hello, this is my office.
Yeah, I like it. Lots of room.
Do you know who Roland Blum is?
Objection!
Why would you object? What are you afraid of?
With Roland Blum, the standard playbook goes out the window.
This is a joint trial. The two of you are joined at the hip, so get used to it. Woo!
I'm ready to fight. The resistance starts now.
Do your worst.
Oh, don't tempt me.
As attorneys, we are not finders of fact. There's beauty in a well-told lie.
Well, no, come back.
I'm sorry, are you still here?
So season 3 of The Good Fight is starting next week, and we pick up 9 months after the end of season 2 when Diane is being investigated by the FBI as having some sort of connection to an assassination attempt on the president.
Yes, that president.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Very much that president. And it kind of went really wacky and broad and then kind of brought itself back in. And that's been kind of the direction the show is going. And so now season 3 picks up, as I said, 9 months afterwards. And the main storyline has to do with the iconic founder of Diane's law firm being investigated or discovered that he was sexually harassing and assaulting employees.
A sex pest.
Yes.
Yes.
I love this show. I think it's tremendously entertaining, and it has tackled the American political situation in a really interesting way, embracing the crazy, but with some depth and showing you where things could go, might go, but while commenting on how the country and the world is reacting to it.
Watching it, you are reminded how clever it is in doing that. It does not change any names. It name checks the Trump family. They're part of it. Yeah, it throws stones, but also it speaks in grand themes, but the characters are real people. And you get the sense that these are actually real people and they talk the way we do. They're as frustrated as most of us all are with the current occupant of the White House.
Sure. But it's not one-sided at all.
No, exactly.
And lampoon isn't the right word tonally, but it definitely sends up in a way a certain kind of lefty perspective.
Absolutely.
It shows the duality of it really well, better than any other show trying to tackle this subject matter, I think.
Yeah, it tackles it with wit and self-awareness.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, because it could be lofty and go kind of House of Cards in a way that kind of adopted a tone that didn't feel relatable and people didn't speak like real people. Where I think The Good Fight is so good in the way it does deliver the lines that, like I say, these sound like real people having real conversations about the real world in which we live.
Yeah. Much like The Good Wife, of which it is a spinoff, it really expertly handles hot-button issues in a way that presents both sides regarding the Trump administration or the just the culture war broadly.
Yeah.
So this first episode we come back to deals with a certain kind of aspect of Me Too.
Absolutely.
Mm. I mean, it gets a little bit over the top, like even more over the top, I think, than in the last season where there's a cartoon song explaining non-disclosure agreements. There's there's just moments of, well, this is pretty weird.
Mm.
And you wouldn't expect it from this kind of a show.
Mm. And I'm led to believe there's more of that as this series progresses. Yeah. I've seen some tweets.
It's just a taste, I think. Mm. And it's kind of exciting. I only watched the first episode, but I'm very much looking forward to it.
It's disconcerting at first.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, it's weird.
What are we doing here? Cartoon songs.
I thought I was watching the wrong show for a second.
I thought it was an ad break.
Yeah.
But no. Hang around, stay with it, and yeah, it makes sense in the grand scheme. And given the first episode does deal with Me Too, it, you know, looks at a company and the reckoning that happens when someone who is your fearless leader who has died and his legacy, and they're all about protecting legacy because this law firm is very much trading on his name and his reputation. What do you do when his reputation is soiled? And rightly so. But equally, you hear the testimony of one woman in particular who sort of is the first whistleblower, and that plays out a few times. So it goes back to personal testimony and holding that up, and we hear it, as other people hear it, several times throughout the episode. And Audra McDonald, I think, especially deserves a shout out in
this episode.
Yeah, she is his daughter.
Right.
And I think the range that she goes through in this episode of, they shield her from that news at first, but then when it suddenly comes out, she gets to act in various ways of awareness and then wondering, well, who else knew and who else is implicated as part of this?
Her emotional evolution throughout the episode kind of presents all the different stages and lots of different perspectives that somebody heavily invested in the situation, being his daughter, but also knowing that he did horrible things. Mm. And they just did a great job of presenting this other perspective of not wanting to bring Black men down and that kind of thing, which I really appreciated. I thought that was really interesting. Like, the show doesn't come down hard on one thing or another. It shows you everything.
Well, it acknowledges how complicated it all is.
Yeah.
I think it walks the line really well. Like I said, you hear the women's testimony and like they do believe them. It's also, well, oof, what do we do with this information? And that was before I got here. Am I implicated as well? Like it is all those conversations that are being had.
I think it's got to be a testament to the writing that this stuff is delivered without being preachy, without being message.
Yeah.
None of that. No signposts, just this is how people deal with this stuff in the real world. Mm. Yeah, great.
So glad it's back.
So The Good Fight is back Wednesday, April 17 at 8:30. After the episode's air, they'll be available to stream at SBS On Demand.
So next up, we want to talk about The Ice Storm, Ang Lee's wonderful 1997 film set over a tumultuous Thanksgiving period in the 1970s in Connecticut, where a literal and figurative ice storm is closing in.
Next stop will be New Canaan, Connecticut. New Canaan, Connecticut, next stop.
Once there was a time when families were strangers.
Paul?
Hey, Dad.
Guy? I'm just confirming, you'll be on the 440 on Wednesday, right? So you and your sister can mope around the house, and your mother and I can wait on you hand and foot while the two of you occasionally grunt for more food.
Neighbors were lovers.
You know, I think Elena might suspect something.
Is that a new aftershave?
Musk or something.
And America was learning the truth.
Are you watching this?
Watching what?
Nixon doofus. He's a liar.
Calm down. I wasn't in on it.
So I first watched this movie, I think I was a senior in college, or I just graduated, and my taste was forming, and I was getting into different kinds of things, and this movie came along and blew me away. I became obsessed with it. I read the book, Rick Moody's book that it's based on. I became obsessed with all the actors in it.
Because it is a veritable who's who. Certainly of the time, like 97. So it's Kevin Kline, Joan Allen, Christina Ricci, Sigourney Weaver's in there.
Katie Holmes,
Tobey Maguire.
Elijah Wood. It's a whole bunch of people in various stages of their careers. Like, it's peak Joan Allen, Kevin Kline, kind of maybe right in the middle or maybe towards the end of the peak. And then obviously people like Katie Holmes and Elijah Wood, just kind of, they're very young. Christina Ricci's very young. They're both rising. Although Christina Ricci had been in a bunch of things at that point.
Yeah, she was a child actor. So this one set over a tumultuous, shall we say, Thanksgiving period. And there is literally an ice storm heading to town, to this middle class town in Connecticut. So on the outskirts of New York.
In 1973. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, it's period film. And it's a literal and figurative ice storm that's happening because it is getting really chilly. And as are the relations between everyone, everyone's very frosty, barely communicating. Everyone's kind of half having conversations, a lot simmering under the surface as icicles are literally developing on trees outside.
When it started, I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it and if it would hold up, because I worshipped it so much and it could only, there's nowhere to go but down from there. But I was happily surprised. I mean, Tobey Maguire, he's kind of a goofball, and at first I wondered, is this going to work? Are we sticking with this kid? But I have to say that by the end, I was absolutely floored and reminded of why I love this movie so much.
Yeah. So the adults are all self-medicating and everyone's dabbling with swinging. Like there's a key party, thing that's trying to take off at a neighborhood party that some people are well on board with. Sigourney Weaver's all in. And
that's where all the men put their keys in a large bowl and the women fish out a set of keys and they have to go home with the owner.
Yeah. So the adults are drinking and trying out the swinging thing. The kids are also, they're trying out pot and kind of trying out sex as well.
Yeah.
Not really knowing how to master their own sexuality, but the adults and the kids are kind of all as lost as each other.
That is especially emphasized when the parents try to talk to the kids about what they might be going through and they're just utterly clueless. It's amazing.
Yes. Kevin Kline tries to have a conversation with Tobey Maguire about masturbation and then acknowledges at the end that we should just forget I even said that. Yeah, it's pretty good. And Sigourney Weaver is great as well. She's acidic.
She is so good when she is telling people how not to bore her.
Yes, because she's a very forthright neighbor to Kevin Kline and Joan Allen, who was also having an affair with Kevin Kline. And his pillow talk leaves a lot to be desired. He's talking about work and his wife, and she's, I have a husband. I don't feel the need for another one. But the whole frostiness that we were talking about, there's beautiful cinematography and you can see icicles developing on leaves that look dangerous if you're going to walk around. There's pointy ends and things, something bad might happen. There's just sort of a looming threat.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. I mean,
it's beautiful.
It's
as well.
So pretty.
Exactly.
But there's a looming danger.
Mm. Which is then replicated in the people. Like Joan Allen is just tension personified. She's just waiting for her husband to leave her or have the guts to admit he's having an affair.
Kevin Kline says, we're going to have a conversation at some point, he and his wife, and the conversation never happens. There's a half-hearted attempt at one, but Joan Allen, what makes her so great in this movie? She just keeps it all in. Mm. And even there's kind of a catharsis, but it's just so subtle.
Mm.
And it's on her face the entire time. It's so good.
And it's in the costuming as well, and her perfect hair and just her carriage, the way she's so upright and perfectly coiffed, but you just know she's falling apart inside. And she's extremely thin. I think she might have lost weight for the role. She just looks like tension personified. So, dealing with kind of miserable stuff. But it's not a sad sack of a movie
at all.
And that's what I love about it. It is funny. There's a wit to it. And it's about miserable people in a cold place. But it's so alive. And there is a warmth to the way that we observe their misery.
There's so many different ways a story like this can go, a movie like this can go. And the temptation could be to make it wallowing and morose. But it is very entertaining. It's very funny. And it moves really quickly. And the whole time you're thinking about, oh my God, these people are so emotionally closed off and there's so many things unsaid. And then things happen. And by the end, I just felt squeezed by this tension.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a bit of release at the end. I guess what I'm trying to say is that if it hadn't been so entertaining, I mean, it would be just a totally different thing. I mean, I think that's what makes it stand out.
Well, it would be a melodrama, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not. It's not. It's dealing with.
It'd be like an early Woody Allen or a Bergman movie or something.
Yeah. True.
I guess this is also, this is Ang Lee at his best, maybe. For me personally, he's coming off Sense and Sensibility, which is another great movie.
In his English language films.
Yes.
Yeah. This was originally going to be his first English language, but I think Sense and Sensibility just pipped it. But, he had an established career before he started making films in America. But it is beautiful, and you can sort of see how this is also the same filmmaker who then went on to make Brokeback Mountain down the track.
Oh, right. He had done Eat, Drink, Man, Woman.
Yeah.
And The Wedding Banquet.
Absolutely.
Those are great.
Mm.
Yeah, so let's say peak Hollywood then, because then he does Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon a few years later.
Mm. Last Caution. And this clear sense of empathy and time and place you can see later played out differently in Brokeback Mountain. It's similar.
Oh,
kind
God,
of.
Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Ang Lee? I think, was it the Hulk that broke him?
No. He did Billy.
No, Brokeback Mountain was after the Hulk.
Mm. The Long Halftime Walk.
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
Correct.
Didn't know about it, didn't see it.
Mm.
I watched Life of Pi.
Of course, Oscar.
I didn't like that movie.
Okay.
Well, it was okay. It was all right.
Okay.
Taking Woodstock.
I interviewed him for that.
Did you? Did you ask him about the ice storm?
No, I talked to him about taking Woodstock and his career and whatnot. Sorry. You know how it goes. You get your 6 minutes.
Oh, Jesus. So the ice storm.
Highly recommend it.
Highly recommend it. Everybody should watch it. It's streaming at SBS On Demand right now. So now we come to the part of the show where we talk about what we have been watching.
Nick, what have you been watching?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. I started watching the latest and last season of Veep, which is the satire originally from Armando Iannucci.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. He's no longer on the show, but it's wrapping up. Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays Vice President. She is incredibly incompetent and clearly unfit for the office that she holds. But somehow she's running for president again. And
stranger things have happened, Nick.
Well, yes. See that? I mean, I love the writing on this show. Yeah. It's very smart and sharp and super nasty. And in the absence of, well, there's a new Alan Partridge show. But this kind of writing, I just feel like I always like to have in my life in some way or another. It's kind of stems from a British satire. It's still, to me, extremely funny. It's not as good as maybe the first few seasons. It's getting really over the top, and it has a serious challenge. How do you make a show crazier than what is actually happening?
Correct.
It's very difficult, and you can't help but think about it the whole time you're watching it. So it's kind of unfair to a show like this. But it's really sharp, really funny. And there are overt nods to the current political situation. And I guess when it works, I think it goes really over the top and just shows you blatantly what you would imagine people are saying in the Trump administration. So he calls non-white countries shitholes. Mm-hmm. They won't do the same thing on Veep, but they'll go further and nastier. And it's just a kind of it just reminds you of that. That's not maybe the best parts of it, but I'm really enjoying it. It's still very funny.
Mm. And I do think, yes, it's coming out now in the time of the Trump administration, but like you say, it references a political kind of comedy that's British tradition, like even back to Yes Minister or something, where it lifts the veil, and that could apply to any kind of all the political animals, even here in Australia and whatnot. It's kind of just the inner circle and the inner workings of our leaders that you see them for there. Foibles, and it's played for laughs, and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, everyone's great in it. She is pretty outstanding. Great show, highly recommend it. It's a couple of episodes in on Foxtel.
Is it the final season?
I believe so. Okay. What are you watching?
A couple of things. Well, I had a bout of the flu, so I had a few days in
bed. Oh
no,
is everything all right now?
Thank you for caring. I'm fine. But my kind of go-to when I'm a bit sick is Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my old friend when I'm feeling a bit poorly. Because I just need a bit of a giggle, and I cannot go past Catherine O'Hara's. Her line delivery is the best. As I hope you've seen the show, but yes, it's about a formerly very wealthy, well-to-do family who have fallen on hard times and have had to retreat to the town of Schitt's Creek, which they bought, ironically, back in the day, and is their only remaining asset. And
it's even funny when you describe just the premise.
Yeah,
it's a funny show.
It is a very funny show, and Catherine O'Hara is an actress, Moira, who adopts a very cosmopolitan accent, has all the affectations. Even when she's being sincere, she sounds completely inauthentic. Yeah, it's just the best. I love it. So,
are you all caught up?
No.
Isn't it wrapping up, or is it getting?
It probably is, yeah, but no, I'm just streaming. I'm trying not to binge too many because I still want to have some left. So, three, four at a time.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's what I like to watch when I'm feeling a little poorly.
But you don't have to be sick to watch it.
No, you don't. And Schitt's Creek is available on Netflix.
Well, that's it for our show. Make sure you subscribe to SBS The Playlist wherever you're having to be listening to this or wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you leave a review. It helps people find the show. If you want to get in touch, follow us on Facebook or Twitter at SBS Movies. I'm on Twitter at Nick Bassine.
I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
The Playlist is produced by Jeremy Wilmot. See you next week.
Thanks for listening.